kingly confidence, masculine mastery, fearless freedom. Welcome to the podcast that supports you to show up in the world as the unapologetic, unfuckwithable, free-loving king you were born to be. Join Masculine Mastery Coach Mark Usher on a journey to releasing conditioned stories of unnecessary stress, struggle, and shame, while unlocking unlimited levels of inner peace, power, and prosperity in every area of your life. Fearless freedom comes to you as you self-authorize your masterpiece life, knowing in your truth, you move with nothing to prove. You are enough. And now, Mark.
Very often before just entering the podcast arena with you, my psyche intuitively just lands me upon a place to start from. And today has been one of those spontaneous offerings forward from the subconscious realms of my mind to land me upon the right path to kick off this journey together with you today from. My mind brings me back, and I've spoken about this and various times. It's been such a pinnacle birthing place of my renaissance as a man, and indeed I've spoken into the space with you before. Kings of Freedom actually was birthed from this, the enfoldment of this experience I'm going to recount with you. And yet in today's topic, talking about creating sacred safety and this leading to infinite intimacy, it's a very potent place for me to start. If I rewind about just over 2 years ago, I found myself in an exquisitely vulnerable and open place, as raw, as vulnerable, and like downright feeling under attack, actually. That was the inner feeling. It seemed that everything in my inner world was spinning out of control, with what I was witnessing happen in my deep, intimate relationship with my queen. Having invited a guy into our home, I invited him in, and, you know, it was sort of ticking a box practically for us at the time. It was getting our 8 horses. It was sort of one of these swaps for bed and boarding. We were getting the payout of getting practical jobs done around the place, getting the horses mucked out. So superficially, it actually served us quite powerfully. And I ended up, after 2 days of this man being in our space, after 2 days, I fell quite ill with a chest infection. Long-term asthma sort of meant that a chest infection for me had the potential to really knock me and floor me. And this one was really exceptionally hard in how it hit me. And it ended up taking me 2 weeks to really overcome that. In the same 2 weeks that I was coming to and sort of really just in bed so much of the time and wiped, and I was wiped physically, but energetically and emotionally I was wiped. And I sort of feel that my bodily intelligence was giving me a real gift and a sign of where I was and where I was not. I'm reading the book Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No. And this was my body definitely saying a firm no to a way of existing, a way that I was showing up emotionally and psychologically that just was not working for me. What was happening before my eyes was, let's say energetically, my queen and this man were becoming energetically, emotionally, exquisitely close, as I witnessed from the sidelines almost. In my state, I didn't really feel I had the physical power or energy to engage. And to be honest, there was a deep revealing of a massive amount of shame in myself. And what the shame was circling around, and I touch base with you know, lean into this conversation. Definitely, you know, just enjoy or learn from my openness and my vulnerable sharing, of course. But I invite you to lean in vulnerably too and touch base with what really touches home with you as I tell this story. what the shame and deep sense of inadequacy that was coming up for me was within the area of intimacy. And it wasn't even a word that I would have been using much at all, that was in my vocabulary at all, but I can look at it now, and it was intimacy. For 12 years, 12 years of my relationship previous to that, almost the golden thread of almost every single argument that I was having with my queen in all of those times, probably hundreds of arguments, from small ones to the most intense, almost running out the door, total split, Armageddon style reactivity that happened quite often. The golden thread was normally my inadequacy in showing up in deep intimacy with my queen. My lack of emotional connectedness with her. My queen was repeatedly saying it to me, sort of in many different ways. As I say, the golden thread was deep intimacy, but in many different ways, it's like, Mark, you know, you're not feeling into me. You're not connecting with me. I can't feel you. You're saying you love me, but I can't feel the love. You're not sensitive to to picking up my presence. You're not sensitive or aware when I'm in the room and in and around you. And there's so many of these communications. And to be honest, it really brain fucked me, because I would like take on board as much as I could, but I didn't actually know on a practical level what she was looking for. And I took on board this subconscious belief, it's like, that I was emotionally broken somehow. That there was some almost like inherent defect with how my nervous system was set, because it was like, no matter how many times she asked and no matter how many times I diligently, sincerely would promise, it's like, I'll try better, I'll do better, you know, I'll pay more attention, I'll be more aware, I'll emotionally try and do this thing that, you know, the language, it doesn't make sense on an inner experiential level. It didn't at the time. But I'd try and be more emotionally sensitive, and all of these requests that she was asking of me. And, you know, for every promise that was made wholeheartedly and with great intentionality, it's like I could rationally sort of show up and rationally pay attention and rationally engage for a few days, but it's like, it wasn't an embodied state of being. I didn't know how to do it authentically in a real way to show up emotionally present. This all led to the culmination where this man that came into our space and, you know, wounded meets wounded, and there was a profound gift that he gifted me as a man in many senses. He was like the polar opposite from his wounds that he had. He leaned very much in on the lover archetype, and the lover archetype emotionally is all about connection. It knows no boundaries. So it was all about emotional sensitivity and, you know, connectedness and intimacy. And I'm going to use the definition of intimacy because, you know, sometimes until you can actually define what something is, it's very hard to relate to what it is. So intimacy, the easiest definition I have that is sort of the most user-friendly to my mind initially, but I believe to most men's minds that we can get a grasp of it, is intimacy equals into me you see. So practicing intimacy is allowing you see into me. This podcast right here today, and I try for the vast majority of all the different episodes, is to make sure it's an intimate sharing. It's an intimate conversation with you. Into me you see. I share about my inner world challenges. I share about my life. You get to see into me. So into me you see. It's an intimate conversation that I endeavor to create here. The feedback is that's what most guys that have given me direct feedback, they're pointing to that. It's just this revealing. I speak to stuff that sort of many layers, they're sort of afraid to speak to it, that it's an uncommon conversation. So intimacy in that level, that's what this man sort of embodied I would sort of sprinkle in quite unconsciously. But as he showed up like that, it's like he ended up representing for my woman, for my queen, like a sense of possibility that she had almost given up on. She spoke to me afterwards, like we had a obviously a deep, healing, intense journey, and incredibly intense inner journey that I had went through, and she had to go through as well, individually and collectively, together as a couple. And you know what she said to me afterwards was, it's like, Mark, it's like I just come to a point where I thought, okay, he has plateaued. I've just got to accept that's how Mark is. You know, he can't give any more than what he's got. That's him. He's maxed. And one stupendously potent part of human biology and energy and emotionality and the sacredness of what it means to be human and imbue life with meaning, one key component, recipe, part of that was missing for my queen, which was hope. She'd no more hope. It's like hope was gone. It's like we've plateaued. We were in our mid-30s and it's like, whoa. You know, if I stick with this man, if he's my king and, you know, like in many senses, you know, he's ticking a lot of boxes, as good a dad as possible, you know, doing good things in the world, you know. But she was like, there was no hope looking forward. Was she just going to have to live out without getting to experience this deep, intimate, emotional, spiritual, energetic connection that she yearned for so much? You know, there was no hope, she felt at that point, of it ever happening with me, because, you know, for 12 years I was promising, but I couldn't deliver. So intimacy was such a key point and a key lack in our relationship. I want to touch base with you, you know, making this there again. And I'm going to remind you of intimacy. Into me you see. To make this an intimate experience for you, you know, of course we're not in a conversation in a way, you're not actually replying to me, but I invite you now to touch base within yourself. You know, allow yourself see into yourself consciously now. You know, where is intimacy for you a challenge? Have you noticed, has your queen, or indeed powerful gay man listening in, your king, have you noticed it? Is that a challenge for you? Are there times when your beloved partner, who you love so much and they love you so much, are there times when they're looking for more from you? They're looking for you to engage more, to be more sensitive, to be more feeling, to be more in attunement with their needs, to have almost this unwritten, unspoken connection just alive, this love. Have you found that that's a challenge for you? How is that challenge living out in your life? Does this challenge of being intimate and sharing your inner world with your beloved partner, does that create conflict for you or for your partner in between you at times? Are there times when, like myself, you know, I just stonewall for years? I just get to the point in these conversations where I just shut down. And it seemed very ignorant, but there was a protective part. I just shut down. I didn't know. My emotional system would become overwhelmed with what was being asked of me. And if I didn't stonewall, I'd just get aggressive. It was stonewalling out of protection for myself, but actually protection for my queen, because it's like, you can, you know, get a dog in a corner. What's the old saying? You know, you can stick a dog in a corner, but at some point, if you keep pushing and keep pushing, the dog is gonna bite. So I would stonewall, because it was like this aggressive, stingy attack, the shadow part, which would sort of, I'm caught in a corner, I'd bite, I'd come back, I'd attack. So it was stonewalling silence, and I could do that, like I could just, like, literally do it for half an hour, an hour, more. So yeah, just getting real here about intimacy here at the beginning, you know, what it is, into me you see, and the challenge that it can be. And if you're like myself, and if you're like what appears to me in deep, intimate conversations with men cross-culturally across the globe, I can only talk for the English-speaking population of the planet, but at this point I've spoken to a lot of different guys from a lot of different nations with a lot of different, if you want to say, cultural upbringings. This is one of the key challenges for the vast majority of men. I don't think I've to meet a man yet that, you know, is really comfortable with intimacy. And the guys that I say, like the guy that came to our house, no issue with intimacy. Actually, there was no boundaries there. There was a wounded part. It was almost like preying on the needs of women. You know, it was not a groundedness. There was lots of other stories that came through where this was sort of a pattern. There was a trail of destruction behind this guy. I'm saying this in the most objective manner possible, not keeping a load there. But it's like there can be these times where guys can sort of go, oh, well, I've no issue with intimacy. But actually they do. They're not really trustworthy with intimacy. There's a lot of, they're meeting a lot of their unconscious needs by being the one that can always be there for the other person. I did it to a point where I became like the best friend type scenario, where I could meet the emotional needs of these other women, etc. But it was like when I actually committed to deep intimacy, revealed when my queen was living with me, that's when the whole facade unraveled. It's in long, deep intimacy. When you are, that's why it's married men here at Kings of Freedom. That's when any role will be laid bare for the lack of embodied intimacy and comfort underneath it all. So, laying it out that for the vast majority of people, and look at it, maybe intimacy is not an issue for you, and if not, I'm happy for you. Well done. Virtual high five, boom. 99.9% of guys are going to, I believe, from statistically, from all the different conversations and just different reports of it out there, a lot of guys are going to have their energetic hands up at this point that, yeah, intimacy can be a bit of an issue for you and a big issue. One distinction that is really key here at the beginning to bring forward before we go into the fullness of this conversation is the distinction between cause versus reveal. This is really key, and it really points to the ultimate level of reality. You know, Kings of Freedom, the King archetype. The King archetype is the spiritual archetype. It's the seat of conscious. It's the seat of consciousness that we are. It's the witnessing awareness that looks on at all the details of our life, just aware of the details happening. It's the spiritual essence that just is the presence behind everything that's happening. It's the ultimate level of inner control when we come from there. And from there, we can see that what is happening, we're not reacting to the situation. The reactions are a sign of triggering of wounds from our past. So let's say you come in the door and, like, you know, your woman, your queen, she just, you're celebrating some success you had at work, and she's like, yeah, but you forgot to pick up the book at the bookstore that I told you about. I've told you about it twice this week. And if you feel a real sting of rejection or criticism from that, and this massive load of hurt comes up for you, let's say, the hurt isn't actually being caused by your woman in that moment. The hurt is a revealed wound from years gone by when you witnessed, normally it's going to be your dad experiencing hurt from your mother, etc. It's wounds of times gone by. I think of a quote by the Dalai Lama when talking about this in The Art of Happiness. Granted, external circumstances can contribute to one's happiness and well-being, but ultimately happiness and suffering depend on the mind and how it perceives. So you have external circumstances, and it's like on a relative level, the, you know, the these external circumstances, they can contribute to your happiness and well-being in the moment. But ultimately, happiness and suffering depends on the mind and how it perceives. And the mind and how it perceives depends on your past experiences. You can have two different men that experience the exact same situation with their woman. One guy will find humor in it and will be able to drop in immediately with his woman, and it won't be taken as a personal attack at all. The other guy, because of a different set of previous past experiences growing up, will perceive it as an absolute attack, full-on jealousy, rage, whatever will come up for him. And it has nothing to do with the situation in front of you. You know, for myself, just to give it some sort of practical context, for myself, I have so many different wounds, having looked on at my mom and my dad and how I perceive, misperceive, whatever way you want. There's lots of traumas there. It's not the situation that caused me, but it's like how I interpreted it and the meaning that I attached to it, how my emotional system, if I could cope with it at the time. Trauma comes from a nervous system that is overwhelmed and doesn't know how to digest and then dissociates from the situation, and that's what causes the trauma and the issues later on. In my upbringing, like for example, with my parents, there was never any cheating. There was never any, they didn't break up. They're still together. You know, they're heroes in many senses, how they've managed to navigate so many years and, you know, create a beautiful family situation. And we all grew, you know, healthy and as happy as one can with the emotional tools that were available to my parents. So they're wonderful. They're heroes of mine in so many senses. They've, like, their 10 out of 10 version all the way along was extraordinary, considering the upbringing that they had and the tools that they brought to the arena of marriage and family life. So their contribution was amazing and is amazing to this day. So cheating and the idea of splitting up is not really a trigger for me. It's not really something that my mind is there fearing is going to happen. My greatest trigger is sort of emotional rejection. And if I want to say, it's like, well, I could compare myself to another man, but in my relationship with Matilda, with my queen, her family, no right, no wrong, no better, no worse, whatever, just two different family upbringings. In her family, there was a lot of separation. There was a lot of cheating. There was a major amount of it. It actually was the default mode. It was almost like if you speak with them for more than a couple of conversations, and at one point, I actually learned Italian, so that was the misfortune point. I started understanding everything my in-laws were actually saying about me and about the world. I mean, that's way too much. Ignorance is bliss until you actually understand the language of your in-laws. There's so much language imbued, there's so much meaning imbued, and the women in the lineage, and there's so many women in Matilda's family, multiple generations, and they're all talking about, it's almost like the default inevitability is that a man is going to not control what he does with his penis. Ultimately, just brass tacks. So there's been a lot of wounding there. So Matilda coming in, no better, no worse. Jealousy wouldn't have been really the big thing for me on my screen. I don't really have this triggerability about her, so I could be a bit more humorous when, you know, if a guy came in and whatever, there's a guy, he's good looking, he's fit, whatever, he fancies himself, I could have a bit of a laugh about it. Even Matilda, the role reversal, where let's say a beautiful woman comes in, etc, etc, it would be a major triggering trigger for deep emotional fears within her, because it's like the inevitability is that Mark, at some point, it's inevitable, he's going to look, he's going to fall in love with another woman, and he's going to be gone, he's going to be out of here. That's just to give a bit of an example where cause versus reveal. This is really, really important, and 99.9% of guys don't get this. When you're coming from the cause paradigm, you assume that if you're experiencing an emotion of rejection, of anger, of whatever your shadow emotion that comes up in a moment, the assumption is whoever is there is causing that emotion. So if you're feeling rejection and your wife is there, She's causing you rejection. So what comes from the cause paradigm is like A plus B equals C. Wife plus rejection equals fucking wife. Blame the wife. Sometimes we'll blame the situation underneath the blame. Very often, unspoken, deep down in underneath it is a deep self-shame. Sometimes we can believe, well, we're the cause of the situation. Touch base with yourself, just bringing this into me, you see, this intimacy, this leaning into this conversation to make it of deepest meaning to you. Do you ever find that voice of shame in you attacking yourself? So, you know, from the cause paradigm, you can go and blame your queen, blame your beloved, your king, or you can blame yourself, you can shame yourself. Does your inner critic ever just outwardly say, oh, I'm a fucking piece of shit, it's here I go again, it's my fault, we're having an argument, I fucked up again? Do you ever find that there's a nasty self-attacking part of your psyche that wants to take you down? That's the cause paradigm. And the cause paradigm just draws, like, ends up leading to one of two things. It's a blame response or a shame response. And if you look at it like that, if when you're coming into deep intimacy, and if you're coming at it from the cause paradigm, where it's like, you know, situation, your partner, any triggered emotion means that it was caused by your partner in that moment, and all that comes from there is blame or shame, can you see that the mechanics of coming from the cause paradigm doesn't lead to safety in intimacy? It never will. If the only thing that can result from, you know, experiencing challenging, dark, and I don't like calling them negative emotions, because when you put the term negative to anything, the brain does not move towards pain. They're not negative. They're revealing emotions. You might call them challenging emotions, shadow emotions. When they come to the surface, if the only response is blame or shame, that's not very useful, and it never will be. But that's the bind that 99% of men find themselves in couples. Whereas the other side of that is the reveal paradigm. So you have the same situation. You have your queen present, your king present, you have your beloved there. Add to their presence, you know, anytime, it's like an if-then pre-commitment. If you experience a challenging, revealing, shadow emotion arises, like rejection, jealousy, grief, sadness, anger, rage, etc. If you experience that in the presence of your loved one, that's a revealing of an emotional charge from a past experience that you have yet to digest. What I'm introducing to you now is like at the core essence of Buddhism, it's at the core essence of psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, Carl Jungian, shadow work. It's at the core essence of pretty much any empowering, healing approach you can bring to life, not just to intimate relationships. It's, you know, and intimate relationships, they're so fearful for men because they actually just reveal how we're relating with life. It's just the thing is, and why we struggle in deep intimate relationships, is you can't hide, because your partner is there in the morning, they're there in the evening, they're there at all the times, they're there when you're tired, they're there when, you know, when you're having a tough day, when you arrive home and you've had a shitty day at work, they're there. They're there when the kids are brought in and you have a newborn and nobody's sleeping, they're there. So the facade that might just pass the day at work, might just pass for the client, the facade, the nice smile that you can always try and, no matter how hard it is in your inner world, you'll always have a nice face for your neighbor, your friend, etc., etc., most of the time, that facade just will not work in long-term, deep, intimate relationships. And to a point, it ends up that, you know, our partners really find it repulsive when we're trying to lean in on that facade. So there's a reveal. There's the reveal paradigm. And my slowing down on this point is to make it like this the most deeply meaningful conversation that you can have in intimacy. Until you're actually coming from a reveal paradigm where you're like, oh, boom, sting, in the door. You know, your woman just hits you with some sentence and it like it triggers a revealing of, wow, there's this anger, this rage that is in your body. It's just livened up. When you can see and practice seeing that as, ah, this is a reveal of some emotional charge. This is a reveal from like a jar of secrets of my past previous experience growing up. This is an emotion. This is a wound that I need to deal with. I need to lean into. This builds a foundation where intimacy starts becoming safe for you and for your woman and your king. Now, in all of this and slowing down to speed up, going into quite a bit of detail there, but it's really essential detail. I want to serve you as always, guys. My commitment is to serve you in the most profound way possible. So, you know, in some stages, I always have this question. It's like, should I just like keep it in bite-sized chunks? But to be honest, bite-sized chunks can be to the mind, oh, well, that's really nice. Wasn't that really convenient? 10 minutes. But there's a slowing down. I really want you to get into the nuts and bolts of this so you get a deep understanding of what this is about. So the cause versus reveal mode. If you're just in the cause paradigm and you're just happy to live out blaming and shaming and off you go on into the sunset, hey, look, it's personal choice. But at Kings of Freedom, it's always inviting you in and challenging you to step up into taking an inner response to your situation, becoming response able in your situation. You know, between stimulus and response, you have the capacity to make a conscious choice, which will change the rest of your life and the results that you have. That's the reveal paradigm. I'd just like to speak into the space briefly, you know, why it is that we end up having such, I've touched on it, but why we end up having such challenge as men in allowing people get intimate with us. Why opening up our inner world for our woman to look in, for our kids as well. This is, intimacy is a thing with kids as well. You know, it's like they're looking for intimacy as well. Why this becomes such a challenge for us as men is, you know, when we were so open and allowing people see what was going on with us. Just step back into your childhood here. This is the bit where guys, don't fucking talk to me about childhood. I don't want to go back to that. Give me some fucking peak performance stuff. As I sort of say playfully and provocatively in different episodes, it's like, if that's the sort of podcast you want, you know, knock yourself out. There's plenty of them out there. You gotta go back to the murky depths of Shadowland, and that's your past, to reveal your fullest truth. So my invitation is to courageously and vulnerably in your mind now, you know, just drop back into your childhood as you're growing up as a boy. And do you have any experiences that when you revealed, you know, a part of an emotional trigger, an emotional experience that was going on for you, you know, when you were 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, when, you know, you fell, you tripped over, you hurt your leg and you just started crying. Do you have any memories of, you know, other boys, maybe your dad, your uncle, a coach, you know, these comments of, get up, come on, you pussy, don't be a little girl. You know, boys, real boys don't cry. So you're there in a moment where you're actually being intimate. You're into me, you see, you're allowing these people see into your world. You're crying. And every boy at some point cried. I don't have to ask you. You might not have a memory of it, but it's like a fact of life that at some point, probably regularly, you cried. Kids, when they come in, they cry. So at some point you cried, and you cried regularly to get your needs met. Now, if you learn, and the vast majority of boys learn this, and we bring this into our adult lives, we learn through hundreds, if not thousands, of repeated signs and signals and conditioning from society that any time as young boys that we reveal tears, we reveal the sadness, we reveal the grief, we reveal we're feeling hurt, we reveal like with a hand and looking up just for somebody to understand, some of the guys around us just to support us because we're feeling really hurt. It's like our leg, the pain, whatever it is. Like we're looking for, in that moment, support from the outside. Hundreds and thousands of imprints in our nervous system is we're shamed. It's maybe kiddie language early on might be soft enough, still deeply shaming, but it gets a little bit harder and a little bit more provocative and a little bit more intensely shaming as we go on. Get the fuck up, man. The fuck you staying down? You know, on the football team, in the sports arena, it's like it's the tough guy. It's the hard man. And then we learn from all of these imprints from society, you know, it's like all these films, like they're the ones that reach the top, the hard man in films. It's always the guy that's emotionless. He's emotionless and the only emotion he has is like fearlessness and like passion and confidence, radical confidence as he takes on the thing and he never stops and he never drops. And I think John McClane or Rambo or Rocky, etc., etc. Thinking of the old style guys, you might have the more up to date. I haven't been following the movie scene in a good number of years. There's so many depictions of this emotionless, fearless guy that never cries, that's never vulnerable, that's never shows weakness. So this is why we end up struggling so intensely with opening up and being intimate. You know, like you can be in your 20s now, in your 30s, 40s, 50s, like some guys I'm coaching, like onwards and upwards, like age has no limit. And yet the golden thread is we learn to associate subconsciously in a very definite way that when we were younger, and we open up our doors, we let our armor down and we open up the doors to the inside of our world and we expressed our sadness, our grief, our anger, our rage, our whatever it was, with tears, or we voiced it, we asked for support, we were deeply shamed. And what we experienced can be called social humiliation. And social humiliation is like death. And we maybe, you know, touch base. Do you have direct memories? Are there memories coming up for you where you're like, yeah, I remember that time when my dad just fucking told me, don't be a fucking girl, or that time when somebody just fucking hit me. So it can be that triggering. And some of you will have really direct memories that come up when you were like really lashed out at for being okay with expressing your emotions. That can be highly provocative to somebody who is deeply traumatized. And who knows what your dad, your stepdad, your uncle, whoever that was that lashed out at you, who knows how they suffered the unconscious masculine in their life when they were not allowed to experience those emotions. That's why they're triggered. But we end up shutting down. And there's a part of our inner child, our nervous system, the evolving nervous system, that very diligently decides, I'm not fucking opening my doors up again to let people see my inside and what's going on. I'm not going to be socially humiliated again. I am not going to experience this pain of opening up my tender underbelly, my truth, what's really fucking going on my inside as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, whatever it is. I'm never doing that again. It hurts way too much. This feeling of rejection, the social humiliation, the being laughed at, the being jeered at, the embarrassment, the shame. I'm not going to go. That was exquisitely painful. So whether you have direct memory of it or not, you know, it can happen in major events or just thousands of little mini events that you mightn't even remember, but the sum total, the culmination of all those imprints on our nervous system is men, culturally, we have become, we're deeply, deeply fearful of intimacy. Into me, you see. No fucking way. Because the subconscious thing is, I'm remaining shut, and what I will show up in the world with, does this touch base as being true for you, is, I've got my shit sorted facade. Does that make sense for you in your life? Do you find that you have your own version, like in front of your queen? And guys, I say this at times, like queen or king. Sometimes I go with the, I think is the term, I hope this politically correct, heteronormative language of her data saying that. I speak from there because I'm that's experientially where I come from. I just want to make sure I honor our gay brothers listening in as well. But it can get quite confusing and maybe over adding in a heap of language and all the time. Does that make sense to you? That this social humiliation that you experienced just caused you to shut down, and that, you know, do you have a version of, you know, I've got my shit sorted. I'm good. I've got my shit sorted. And we can come into communication with our loved ones, and the I've got my shit sorted facade is what we meet them with. So like you come in and you come in the door, you're after having like a tough day at work. The client that you thought was going to sign up sort of had a list of complaints. They're actually backing off the deal. They're not going to sign the contract. Whatever, the bank wrote a letter, an email to you. You know, there's a bit of pressure in that. It's just been one of those days. And, you know, whatever. You got caught in traffic on the way home. You got delayed at the office and you got rush hour traffic. So you're in home sort of an hour and 10 minutes later than normal. You're just there thinking, you know, I'm just going to come in. Maybe you haven't expressed a need. But you're thinking in your mind, I'm just going to go, like, you know, sit, watch a bit of TV, or I'm just going to get my running gear, you know, a jog will do me, will do it for me. And you walk in, and next thing, there's a fire to put out. You know, your woman is there. She's sort of saying, hey, you know, she puts some conversation to you, some question. She might challenge you and go, hey, did you take care of the kids thing? Did you write out that report? Did you sign off the paper for the kids that was meant to be in for school or for their club later on? By the way, are you going to go to that? You've forgotten it. So it's this sort of a cesspit of pressure that you arrive into. And, you know, in all of this, very often our partners can go, how are you doing? How are you? Do you ever find that you have a default? I'm fine. I'm good. How's your day? A bit of pressure, but no, I'm grand. What's happening here? And we go back to being hyper aware of what's actually going on in the life of our woman and our queen. What's going on with you? And we become hyper aware. I found this for years, becoming hyper aware of the emotional state of Matilda, the her body language, her facial expressions. What was she communicating? Was she... So I actually became way more aware of what was going on within herself, but not aware of what's going on in me. What this ends up doing is, this is what creates the lack of safety. And it's in this lack of safety that the intimacy, the levels of intimacy remain super superficial. Super superficial. Doubling up there. Because the intimacy is very superficial. It's actually not much intimacy at all. There's no intimacy. Because the I've got my shit sorted facade is not allowing our partner see into our inner world. Of course, we have the reasons from years gone by, but the more we keep persisting in showing up with the I've got my shit sorted facade, I'm here to help fix your emotional situation. I'm here to find a solution for you. That's a big part. The I've got my shit sorted facade is really constructed by the rational mind, the magician archetype, and it's a solution finding. It's a problem solving part of our mind. It's just a part of our mind, but we identify with it so much that we forget that we have more other elements. We have the lover, we have sensitivity, we have emotions deep in underneath, those old repressed parts of ourselves. So we become hyper aware of what's going on in our queen. We're hyper aware of horror posture, of horror emotionality, of horror what's coming out, horror mouth. And we disconnect from what's going on in our own body. And when we're asked, we're like, oh no, I'm fine. And here's the thing. Why that becomes so unsafe, I'm going to bring out the metaphor of you're carrying a loaded gun. And if you ever think of these cartoon sort of depictions, and maybe it has happened like down back in history, where, you know, somebody comes in. I'm laughing to myself because I'm actually doing it in front of you like a visual. I did it in a masterclass within the membership, but you can't see me. There's a podcast. But it's like you have like a gun in underneath your jacket, but the gun is poking out. So it's like if you're in a bank or a post office, people can see that there's potentially something there. There's potentially a grave danger to people. You know, you could be carrying a gun, or maybe it's just like a cartoon-like skit, or it's a banana, but there's a potential danger there. With our facade of, I've got my shit sorted, you know, I'm okay, yeah, whatever happened to work, but like, I don't, we're discounting, we're not even aware in our body that there's a major rage, there's a major anger, there's actually a deep depression, there's sadness, there's fears going on, there's you're deeply anxious. That is so repressed and suppressed and hidden behind a facade that we genuinely answer. It's like, oh, no, I'm fine. And we think that's enough. Now, here's the thing. And I know for Matilda for years, and my eldest daughter, Anya, I've spoken about this in the anger episode that resonated so deeply with so many guys. I got like a load of feedback for those episodes. I've since slowing down and getting into my body and getting really intimate with my queen and with my kids, I've since learned with great humility, sacred humiliation, is the ground of truth. I've learned opening up with them and them learning that I'm more and more safe and trustworthy. They've opened up with me. Them telling me what seems so obvious now, but my old way of just using the I've got my shit sorted facade, hiding out there and disconnecting from my body and my emotions, it's now so obvious, but it was not obvious for those 12 years. Was they just told me, it's like, hey, Mark, when you come in, Matilda would know that how I would open the door here in this room coming down from a Zoom call with a potential client. She's like, Mark, I'd know from how you'd open the door, how the latch comes off, how much force you've used. I'd know by the steps, by the rate, the cadence of your steps, how loud the steps are. It's like, I'd know how your emotional state was. I'd know by if you had a cough, a tick. It's like, hey, when you're nervous or there's something really deep going on, my throat tightens up. I'm acutely aware of that now, actually becoming more in tune with my body. I wasn't back then. She knew all of these little behavioral tics that I had, that before I even opened my mouth, she knew that there was an emotional loaded gun present. She knew. So then when she was like, oh, how did the meeting go? Oh, it was okay. And then my awareness would go to, well, what's happening here? You know, or if there was a conflict, if there was a conversation to be had, my awareness would just go hyper aware or hyper focused on what she was saying, on what she was feeling, on her level of emotionality, and never coming into my own body and, you know, never having an awareness of what was happening within me. I just didn't want to go there subconsciously there again, you know, from the patterns of times gone by. That made me deeply unsafe to be around, because Matilda, my queen, and, you know, my kids, Anya is 11 and a half now, like she has really, it's taken a year of me being very dropped in and diligent in this practice to become safe to the point at which she can actually be fully present in my presence in a room. There was a lot of grief there. She was really, really afraid and fearful in my presence. There was a lot of reactivity in her nervous system where she would dissociate because, hey, I had a loaded gun. I wasn't aware of it. And in that loaded gun that I was denying, I was suppressing, I didn't know I was suppressing, I was totally unconscious, the loaded gun would be there. And I'd deny it. They'd know it was there. I'd deny it. But they couldn't make me you know, aware of it. I didn't want to go there. And that loaded gun was like a wave would lead to another wave. And if it wasn't in that situation, it would be the next day or in a week's time. That tsunami, I would explode. And they would get hurt. And this was a nasty cycle. So, when I'm leading up, this is actually a very deep dive. I want all of this to lead to a practice that has really supported me in literally transforming my entire emotional life in intimacy with my queen and in intimacy with my kids. There's been a lot of setting the context and going deep into the mechanisms, unapologetically so. As I say, my commitment is to serve you and to empower you with the most potent information to support you building the foundation for transformation in your life. That's what this podcast is all about. You know, Kings of Freedom. Freedom is not a conceptual idea. It's a lived phenomenon within yourself. That's transformation, not information. The practice is this, and it's a practice. It's not something that you can listen to and rationally just tick the boxes. Oh, I'm going to do this. Brum, 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 brum. It's not something, a one-line sentence that you just say and abracadabra, boom, done. It's a practice. It's an art. You know, I nail it some days, other days maybe not. It's systematic, but maybe sometimes I'm practicing it within myself. Other times I'm consciously speaking it into the space with Matilda coming present with her or with my kids. Other times it's just one segment of it that I'd speak to, but I'm going to be systematic and I'm going to explain it to you. Creating sacred safety leading to infinite intimacy in your relationship with your beloved and with your kids, and indeed by extension any other person that you are in a deep relationship with. It could be some close friends, men that are in your company, brothers, etc., mothers, fathers, whoever it is, you get the picture. If you're in an intimate relationship where intimacy, into me you see, is sort of like a needed requirement of it, one of the first things that's really important is just pause. And, you know, if you feel, there's an if-then that I set this commitment with Matilda and with my kids. If I feel myself harden and go into closure, then I actually bring a bit of humor to it. Then I shut the fuck up and I relax. That's a little bit of humor. It sort of brings a bit of a laugh with our 11-year-old. It's sort of like I hit myself an energetic slap in the face. She's sort of, that's just practicing sacred humility. It supports her in knowing that she's really safe with me. It's like, if I become aware that I'm hard, I'm going into closure, then I relax, I go quiet. So it's like, if you notice yourself jumping into blaming, jumping into shaming, if you notice yourself getting tense, in that awareness, pause. And the first of the approach is aware care. This final bit is there. It's my approach to dealing with shame, the voice of shame within. But the first part of it is become aware. And that involves a pause. No matter what rush you're in, no matter where you're going, no matter what your intention was, if your woman, if your partner, if your child is engaging you, become present. And the only way of becoming present is not by thinking. That's the avoidance mode that we learn to avoid intimacy, to avoid the feelings. That if you keep constant chatter going in your head, you never have to tend to the emotions underneath, the shame, the rejection, all of this stuff that we packed away years ago. The first thing is become aware. Become aware of your posture. Literally, just touch base. And part of this practice can be you might speak by arrangement, by agreement with your queen before, with your kids. You can say, hey, look, I'm going to try out this new practice. You know, I want to communicate and connect with you. So, you know, anytime I feel myself racing in my mind or I'm not fully present, I'm just going to practice this. The first thing is become aware of your posture. I'm going to speak it like you note it into the space, but this can happen in your mind. Like your posture. Your posture is going to tell you the truth. Your body never lies. So often the I've got my shit sorted, the nice guy persona can actually be trying to focus your mind on your woman, on your kid. It's like, oh, okay, you know, your kid is telling you something that happened, it's cool. Well, tell me, honey, what's going on? But your body, your posture, is actually your 2 feet are pointing out the door to your shed where your running gear is. Your body is pointing that way. The only thing that's facing your kid is your eyes, intermittently, but you're actually looking over at the door. Your eyes are glancing subconsciously at the clock. Your whole body is screaming, you're not important. I want to get into that room. I've something way more important to me than you. That's why you become aware of your posture. You know, if you're in a conversation that's got sort of suddenly quite tense with your partner, notice your posture. Become aware. Your arms are folded. You know, you're maybe looking at the clock again. You're just like, this is this the time? Don't have time for this shit now. Your posture, your the awareness of your body. Do you notice yourself posture? Part of posture is like, is your head facing away? Your eyes. Are you struggling to actually face your woman and just be present and face her completely, wholehearted, open? Are your shoulders forward? Is your heart closed off from her? So become aware of posture. Speak it into the space. This mightn't make sense, like, as a first practice. If you're like, oh geez, I can't just speak this into the space. This is a context, and this is something that on agreement, you start practicing it and you do it more and more. It's an absolute life changer. What ends up happening with this is like the posture. It's like when you speak and you go, oh wow, you know, I'm just becoming aware that actually my arms are really, really tightly folded. You become aware. Once you become aware, you'll find naturally, you'll just release the grip and you'll come back into your body. This is like taking the gun out from underneath the jacket and going, yeah, I've a loaded gun here. And you put it on the table in front of you. This creates trust. It creates awareness. When you demonstrate awareness of what's actually happening in your body, this is so freaking deeply meaningful to the person in front of you. Because you are in that moment taking the uncommon step, radically uncommon within modern men, of being aware of what's happening in your body. The next layer are physical sensations. You know, underneath the posture, physical sensations. Oh, I can feel tension in my jaws, or I can feel I have a headache. There's tension, there's stiffness in my neck. You know, my shoulders, they're all tensed up. It's like they're all sort of stressed up, caught in a ball. Maybe there's a pain there. There's pain in your lower back. Physical sensations, you might notice like a heat or a warmth in your heart. Like a gurgling in your tummy. Sometimes that can be relaxing down, or it can be tense. Your tummy muscles all tense, or butterflies. Oh, I can feel there's butterflies. There's these physical sensations. Yeah, there's butterflies in my tummy. I can feel that my ass is tightening up. You know, sometimes you'll hear it said, oh, he's a tight ass. It's like tightened up with tension and anxiety in a stress mode. So speaking physical sensations, there again, it's coming, this practice, you speak this into the space. It's like, oh, I'm becoming aware. And you speak the physical sensations into the space. This is shifting you from your head, from the repetitive, instantaneous, trigger-happy way of thinking that's going to rapidly and has done for many times before, if you're having issues like I have had and many men have had in intimate relationships, in these tense moments. You know, getting into your body is getting into the present moment. When you're in the present moment, you're not acting out the patterns of avoidance, the patterns of blaming and shaming of the past. So there again, it's becoming safer. The gun is now clearly out on the table. Physical sensations. With practice, your kid and your woman, your partner, will find, wow, he's actually aware. Because they can pick up on it. Here's the thing again. I want to remind you guys. You know, we get so used to, I've got my shit sorted facade, that we actually think that's convincing the world. It never does. within a nanosecond, they mightn't even know it. They mightn't be trained sociologists or psychologists to pick up on the exact signs, but they can energetically pick up tension in the jaws, the way he's chewing, the way he's looking, the furrow in the brow, the tone of voice, you know, the posture, within a nanosecond. And from nanosecond to nanosecond, they're picking up a shift in your emotional change, in your emotional state anyway. So it's not that it's impossible to hide your emotional and psychological state from people who know you. From your kid, they can read you like a book. Your partner, he or she, they can read you like a book. Within an instant. Just like, it's almost like, just accept it. And I'm not ridiculing you ever. It's like, for 12 years, I sort of subconsciously thought, you know, when I said, oh, I'm fine, I actually thought that was believable. It's just I was scared shitless to go in underneath all of this. Scared of intimacy. But that triggered and frustrated my queen even more, which created more tension, which, like, what could have been a 2-minute conversation became a 2-hour conversation, a full-on argument that lasted into the early hours of the morning, and it rumbled on for weeks afterwards. And like 3 weeks later, it's like, yeah, but that fucking time that you fucking said that, that's the type of drama that was happening in my life. I don't know if that drama is happening in your life. So this is a real radical practice to bring in a new pattern. You know, if you want uncommon results, you have to start practicing uncommon things. That's like in any training. So it might seem like there might be a lot of resistance coming up for you. But hey, you know, just lean into, go beyond the resistance. It's a bit like going to the gym. You know, when you start going to the gym, there's a lot of resistance. But if you just keep going, then you got to start getting fitter, start getting better. You don't lose all the weight. You don't get fit overnight. But with practice, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, you have a radically different life situation. So physical sensations and posture, become aware of those. Then trust your intuition on this. This is a practice within deep men's work. Speak the emotional charge underneath the posture or the physical sensations. Very regularly, when you just slow down and you've tapped into your body, you've spoken into the space, become aware of physical sensations. Like, there's a charge of emotion underneath them. That if you slow down and you just trust your intuition, you don't have to get too heady. And in the beginning, this can be actually quite challenging. I found it challenging, but I just learned, my encouragement here is to just trust your intuition. Just, you know, whatever your mind brings up, it's like, just trust that. It's a practice. There's no right or wrong in many senses, but it's like, you know, sort of classic ones. It's like, oh God, I'm feeling like the physical sensation might be fluttering and butterflies in the stomach. The emotional charge might be, there's anxiety there. Or, you know, I feel real clenched up, tightened up jaws. Might be anger, aggression. Is, you know, if you feel a headache, you could say, oh, well, there's a charge of frustration. Or there can be, you know, a sense of heaviness on the chest. And I'm giving these as suggestions. This might be how it shows up for me. There's no right or wrong, but it's like, oh, there's a charge of sadness there. And indeed, there can be massive excitement. You could be coming in after hitting the jackpot at work and you're in victory mode, and actually your lack of presence is coming from mad excitement. That's important to come in, because it could be the excitement and your happiness for a certain thing that has happened in your day that is preventing you actually being present for whatever is being revealed by your woman, by your partner or kid. So that's important too. A layer of this that's important here is no qualifying or quantifying. What I mean by that, and by the way, this is not my practice. I think what I'm doing is, like, this is a common practice in deep men's inner work and shadow work. Yet what I'm bringing to it is the encouragement that this is not just a tool to work and do in men's circles. What I've noticed is this practice, although taught and practiced by many men in men's circles and in deep men's work, it actually, they end up not practicing it in deep, intimate relationship conversations and connections with their queens, with their kids. And so they lose their whole potency. So I just have found it so transformative in my life. It's such a foundational tool that it's my emphasis. That's what I'm bringing to it. It's like black belts on the mats in jiu-jitsu. You know, you'll know the black belt warming up because he or she is bringing their whole entire awareness to when they're doing the simple warm-up movements, because they are the foundational movements where they can reach the highest levels of jiu-jitsu. Where you see the inexperienced white belt is like just talking, chatting, distracted, chatting to the guy beside him as he just does a forward roll any old way because, yeah, sure, I've done this before. He's not bringing his full awareness to it. Yet, it's a foundational skill. The black belt knows how important it is. And that, I just invite you into that part of this practice. It's so easy to rationally go, yeah, well, you know, Mark suggested these things, but it's a foundational tool. Becoming present in your body is absolutely foundational. Whatever style you do it, your mindful breath, whatever, becoming present is so foundational. No qualifying or quantifying. What that means is, no qualifying means no adding story. You're not adding seasoning, salt, or pepper to it. You know, if you're like, oh, you know, I feel tension in my jaws. There's a load of anger. There's a heap of anger. I'm so fucking angry. There's intense anger underneath it. That's quantifying. Well, actually, I spoke about qualifying first. It's like, I'm feeling anger because my fucking boss today just like gave me so much shit. Or I'm feeling anger because I came in the door and like, you're just loading me with crap here. You're just loading me with responsibilities. I haven't even got in the door and got to have a glass of water. You know, that's the qualifying. And when you start qualifying, it's like you're taking away from just the virgin, simple, direct experience of having a simple emotion just be present. It's like you're justifying it. And if you end up qualifying and adding a story to every time you speak an emotion in, you're gonna feel an impulse to add a story to any time your partner speaks about an emotion. Your partner will say, oh, I feel sad today. Oh, what's it about? It must be about your mother last night saying that thing. You immediately add a story to it. That's not safe. The way to get through emotions is just allow them be. This is mightn't be part of your training, but this is deep inner emotional work. This is trauma release foundational work. The way to allow an emotion come through the body is emotion is energy in motion. The way to go beyond an emotion is allow the energy to be in motion. Allow it be. Allow it flow through you. So no qualifying, no adding a story, no creating a bit of drama on top of it about the fucking asshole boss or etc. etc. And no quantifying. In check-ins, in men's circles, you'll find, even if given the sort of the bit of guidance or quantifying, and I find with myself as well, the old force of habit can be there, where it's like there's a minimizing or there's an exaggeration of the emotion, which is like, I can feel a little bit of anger there. Like there's a minimizing. It's like, yeah, well, it's like there. It's like I've got my shit sorted. You know, it's like I have this little charge of anger. It's a little bit. It's like it's nothing to be bothered. On to the next guy, please. There's a minimizing of it. It's trying to downplay it. Whereas like not quantifying is, I'm feeling anger. There is a charge of anger present in me. No exaggerating is the far side. Oh, I have so much anger in me. Man, it's just like I'm so fucking angry. There's exaggeration. There's bringing too much drama to it. That doesn't support safety either. So no qualifying, no quantifying. This is black belt level emotional awareness. With practice, you can get to that point. When you're not qualifying and quantifying and you just start going, allowing yourself speak the emotion that you have in the place, that's again, it's putting the gun out on the table for everybody to see. And in doing that with practice, you're allowing yourself love yourself and accept yourself for you're experiencing anger, you speak it out there. You're feeling sadness, you just put it out there. What I want to say is this is a practice. and it can be quite provocative. And this is where I've created the membership within Kings of Freedom, where you get to practice this when we do group work, etc., etc. And there's this part of the culture, what's going on in the beautiful culture that we're creating behind the scenes in the membership at Kings of Freedom. Check it out, kingsoffreedom.me. This is a practice, and it's quite provocative in the beginning to be able to do this, because there again, remind ourselves that social humiliation, we've been conditioned that we're meant to fear. It's almost like social debt by just speaking out that we have grief, to speaking out that there's an anger. We could have been shamed by our mother. Oh, don't get angry around here, Mark Usher. I heard many times mothers sort of deny the masculine expressiveness of a young, intense warrior expression of the boy, the growing, developing boy, that maybe the father's at work, etc., etc. So it can be quite a exquisitely vulnerable practice. What you'll find, you know, when you just allow yourself and practice it bit by bit, is that, you know, your partner will actually appreciate this. And the more you can do it without looking for any reactions, are they accepting you? Are they rejecting you? Are they loving you? It's not about them. Are you accepting yourself and loving yourself as you just speak, I'm feeling anger. I have a charge. It feels like rejection. There's a charge of hurt I'm feeling now. Oh, that's funny. There's a feeling, it feels like grief or sadness. As you put that out, it's the loaded gun on the table. And the more details you can give to it, it's like you start taking the bullets out of the barrel. It's like the loaded gun is on the table, but it's like, hey, here's more details. I'm going to take the bullets out of the barrel, and now the bullets aren't even in the gun. So it's less dangerous. The more you can speak openly, remember, speaking openly about what's happening inside of you, that is the heart essence of intimacy. Into me you see. And it's the one thing, it's the one essence what 99.999999% all partners want. The feminine core wants that. Just to be welcomed into your inner world without being attacked, without you shaming yourself, without you attacking them, without you being on the defensive, just being welcomed in. Baby steps at a time in the beginning. No need for kamikaze vulnerability where it's like, you go way too deep too soon. Just baby steps, little bit by little bit. But this builds trust, and it supports you creating sacred safety, because the more you are able to report this and practice expressing this into the space like I'm describing, the more your partner will feel able to do the same. Because if you're embodying this as a practice, and this worked for me, the more I could just speak about my emotions and what physically was going on for me, a little bit later, a few conversations later, I found my queen, Matilda, was like, oh, yeah, I can feel. And she was reporting what was going on within her. And then we just ended up creating this momentum over the days, weeks, months. And now it's like a couple of years later. By the way, we don't know what it is to have arguments anymore. Intense conversations, yeah, to come up. But we just navigated using these tools. Sometimes we use them really, like, promptly. We're sort of like, if we're rested, we're in good form, whatever, we've done our practices, etc., etc., yoga, meditation, breathwork, etc., yeah, we can done and dust in 2 minutes. Yeah, sometimes, maybe not so quick, or sometimes maybe there's just a fresh charge of some old trauma, and like it could be a 15-20 minute job. It's an intense conversation, but arguments like slingshots and throwing mud and throwing insults and, you know, blaming and deep shaming, they're a thing in the past, actually. Really, and I say that with full confidence. It's not to be arrogant. I've come from, like, clawing my ass in my relationship and marriage out of the shitter on this. So I'm just saying, I'm welcoming you to, I'm inviting you to invite in a new sense of possibility. You know, there is infinite intimacy available by just practicing this. Yeah, there's a repatterning of old protective strategies going by. The second part is care. We're quite a bit into this episode, but I want to make this a real complete episode. It's such a sacred topic. So you have the aware, just a little bit of a recap. Repetition is mastery. You speak in awareness, become aware within yourself, and you just simply slow down and go, hey, honey, hey, like you speak about your posture. Oh, I've noticed like the arms folded and nose, like I'm facing going out the door. My eyes aren't looking at you. Whatever it is, I'm tightened up. Then the physical sensations, no qualifying or quantifying, no jazzing it up, no making any drama, no minimizing or exaggerating, just keep it clean. And if you keep it clean, you're not going to project any quantifying or storytelling or exaggerating when they report into the space, keeping it safe and clean. Then you report the emotional charge underneath the physical sensations or the posture. This is a practice. You don't have to get it A1 in the beginning. You're not going to. No right or wrong. The second part, that's aware. The second part, I call it care. Now, you can go into this in quite a bit of detail, but just keeping it sort of as simple and direct as possible. It can be broken into, I break it into acknowledge, animate, and announce. I've done this on an episode before talking about dealing with shame. Acknowledge, I find it really essential and a practice for myself, but I invite you to do the same, is just to acknowledge that there's a mental chatter going on. Acknowledge you're going to have a high load if it's a conflict moment, if it's an intense conversation, or if it's like an argument, what you call, it's like, you know, you're in this ding-dong battle. There's going to be a part of your mind that is going to be sort of in chatter mode. And there's... it's important to acknowledge that. The second part, acknowledge you within yourself first. It's like, oh, whoa, just become aware. It's like, wow, look, there's a lot of blame going on there. Or there's a lot of shame going on there. Or just acknowledge that it's going on there. You know, going beyond the, oh, how are you, honey? Oh, I'm fine. You know, the I've got my shit sorted sort of response. When there is a voice in your head just on a rampage, with a definite, distinct commentary on the situation, right or wrong, making you wrong, making them wrong, making the situation wrong, saying, it's not the situation, it's not you, honey, but I want to get the fuck out because there's the match on in 2 minutes' time and you don't realize it's the cup final, whatever it is. Acknowledge that there's a chatter there. If you pretend it's not there again, they know it's there and it will piss them off and it will repulse them. And unless you actually acknowledge any of this, what's going on unconsciously, the more they'll keep you there. This is the trick. And this is, don't use this as a strategy to cut conversations down, because if you use it as a mental strategy, they'll whip your ass and they'll know you're not being authentic. But if you want to quicken up your effectiveness in communications, get into your body, become aware and care. So if there's, let's say, acknowledge, if there's a thought strategy, thinking going on in your head of, honey, yeah, look, this just isn't really, I don't feel this is important for me now. The match is on, you know how important it is, it's the cup final, whatever it is. And like, hey, that's okay. Animate it. What I mean by animated is give a voice to it. Give a voice to that part of your mind. Animated by giving it a voice. One of the biggest and most divisive parts of communications in relationship is, it's almost like when we monopolize me and I and you and the other person as well. It's like, you know, if you have a part of your mind saying, it's like, I want to go watch the match. It's like, it's almost like me and my match and my football, or me and my going jogging. It's like all of you. It's like all of you. It's like it's the communication when you use that. It's like, I want to go watch the match, or this isn't important for me. You're speaking in a way that in literal senses means all of you. Animate, this is black belt stuff, but I'm serving you really powerfully and I'm treating you as really, I know guys listening in, you're powerful, powerful men, so I'm treating you as black belts. Animate in the most powerful sense is when you speak to a part of your psyche. We have multiple aspects to our psyche. Archetypal, the king, warrior, magician, lover, etc. We can have the voice of the inner child. You could, like, if you're talking about the match, it's like, you can say to your partner, it's like, hey, the Man United supporter in me is really wanting to get to that match now. I'm after pissing off more all the Liverpool fans or the different fans around the world. Old Man United supporter part in me coming to the surface. You can, it gives a playfulness to it. You can speak about the inner child. It's like, hey, my inner child is just feeling a lot of rejection here. There again, it's taking the monopoly. It's like, I'm feeling rejected. My inner child, a part of me, is feeling rejected. It's a part of you. Not all of you, it's a part of you. And the vast majority of time, there's going to be a part of you. There again, the king archetype is the witnessing awareness, is the seat of consciousness that's looking at everything going on. And the more you're in your body, you'll see that there's actually... Have you ever been in an argument and you ever just sort of get so caught up in it that there's a part of you goes, how the fuck did this even start? You're just in this slinging shit at each other. That's the king archetype, where you're like, wow, how did we get to this? You could be about to break up your entire marriage and you'd be like, a part of you just goes, how did we get to this? That's the king archetype. This is the witnessing awareness that goes, whoa. There's that part of your mind that's just looking on. And then there's this voice that can want to blame, want to shame. The voice of shame, shaming yourself. The voice of blame, wanting to blame them. Animate it. And the part is, you acknowledge within yourself. You animate it, you give it a name, and I say, announce it. Speak it into the space. They know you're in your head, caught in your head anyway. They know that you're like a little hamster, like sprinting around a hamster wheel in your head anyway. So if they know it anyway, but you deny it, that's going to piss them off even more. It's going to create distrust and they're going to tighten up even more. And now you're just in the trenches. It's no man's land. You're just flinging like toxic gas. What's the shit that they were doing in the olden, in World War II? Just fucking trench warfare. It's total bullshit. Didn't work for me for 12 years, nearly ruined my marriage. Don't need to play that tune anymore, but I'm just giving you a context. This is the foundational practice that has created like deepening, expanding intimacy in my life. It's like creating such safety that there's trauma releases happening with my queen between ourselves. We're releasing old charge. I'm supporting my daughters to drop in and learn to be really so safe around me that they're finding their authentic expression. They're learning about their emotions. They're stopping dissociating. It's not complete. There's a lot of healing to go there. You know, 10, 11 years for my daughter, 11 and a half to 12 years in marriage for my wife. There's been a lot of trauma there. But hey, you know, I own it that this practice has been a revelatory practice for me in my life. And you know, this is what I want for you so much in Kings of Freedom. My desire and my love for you and my love for life, you know, the most meaningful experience of life actually comes from deep intimacy. You know, human connection. We can get caught up for 30, 40, 50 years, nailing in that career, hitting the numbers, launching the projects. You know, you make your millions and all of that is sacred. You know, you can win at the Olympics. Wow. You can be the best footballer ever. You can be the best Olympian. You can nail whatever adventures you had at the best, be world class, win all the accolades, be a best-selling author, be the top musician, whatever it is that your sacred expression is. It's sacred. It's wonderful. That's part of your magnificence. But deep, intimate relationships are like the distinguishing difference between people that when they're in their getting older, it's one of the distinguishing difference between people who end up sort of depressed and sad and disgruntled and really desperately wanting to constantly try and relive the good old days when they were a champion, the good old days when they had all the money, the good old days when they're just recounting all the stories of times gone by. They're never present, because the key difference is the person who is like 90 years old and is happy, embodied, present, fulfilled. You're going to find there's one key thing. There's not many of those people, but one key thing is they had had and still have deep, intimate relationships with themselves, first and foremost, and with other people. They're able to speak about their emotions. They're able to speak about meaning in life. They're able to have profound inner world experiences and to communicate that with trusted people in their lives. That's what gives them sustenance and meaning beyond career, beyond the big achievements. Those achievements, they come, they go. Honor them, love them, but it's deep intimacy that brings the sacredness to life. I need a reminder of this. All men need a reminder of this. Kings of Freedom is about actually deep intimacy in yourself. Feeling safe first and foremost, that within your primary masculine and feminine relationship in yourself, you feel safe to own your beautiful masculine and reconnect, remember, reinvigorate your inner feminine, that beautiful, those beautiful, rich emotions that were suppressed years ago. That's the society you lived up in, no right or wrong, but you bring that in a healing journey, in your hero's inner work, deep inner work journey. You reconnect, and that's the integrated man. The King of Freedom is the man that has learned to ferociously self-love and accept all of his expression. The emotions that come up, the shadow emotions, the voice of shame, the inner child voice, everything, just loves it all. And only when you get to the point where more and more you start loving and accepting the emotions, the physical sensations, the voice that comes up in your inner world, then and only then are you in a position to create a foundation where you can show up and create sacred safety for your queen, your king, for your kids to be able to feel safe in your presence. That's when magic happens. That's when you kiss goodbye forevermore for needless arguments and disconnect and the risk of, you know, there's a lot of divorce happening needlessly, a lot of just long-term stagnant shitty relationships where you just see it out in a hopelessness that just is just not becoming the man, the magnificence that you are and what you deserve and your queen deserves and your kids deserve and the fucking world deserves. But you, first and foremost, you deserve to feel loved and accepted for every part of your expression, in your magnificence, in your truth. You move with nothing to prove, you are enough. Slowing down to speed up, coming here near the end. It's been an epic, this one. It's arguably the most important topic of all of Kings of Freedom. Hence, I've went long, I've went deep, unapologetically, unfuckwithably so. I so desire to make this deeply meaningful. If you need to come back to it in three portions, come back to it again and again. There's a lot of richness in this, guys. I've really emptied so much into this episode. This is one to come back to again and again and again. But mainly, practice it. Implement it. I invite you to, if you want to take notes, I invite you into Kings of Freedom. That's where you practice it. There's going to be loads of, there's, you know, the e-books and loads of other informational parts there. But there's going to be, there's the whole culture there to gain greater masculine mastery in this practice. Or come back to the podcast episode, whatever it is, but implement it. Start putting it into play in your intimate relationships. Have the conversation with your queen, with your king, with your kid. You know, bring it as a part of your culture, of a safe, sacred culture of connection where infinite intimacy, into me you see, becomes a part of your practice as the conscious king that you are. Fearless freedom comes from there, masculine mastery comes from there, and kingly confidence, immense trust in yourself, comes from there. You are a beautiful man, you are an amazing man, a magnificent man. I trust you, I believe in you. You are capable to create a stunning level of intimacy in your relationship that is uncommon because of your uncommon willingness to engage first and foremost with listening to this podcast. I want to honor you, as always, for having the uncommon courage in a very superficial world where men get easily distracted. I want to acknowledge you for your uncommon commitment to listen in to the entirety of this podcast episode. If you're returning, I want to extend my appreciation for your courage, for your presence here. I really appreciate your presence. and your courage and commitment to deep inner work and joining this deep, intimate conversation here. I want to speak to you and say that you're part of a growing brotherhood of powerful men listening in around the world. And, you know, I honor you all. You're so deeply important to me. And it's a great part of my purpose and Dharma is showing up here powerfully as I can to support you and to serve you as much as I can. Coming into landing, as I've said before, what has been said already is perfect as it is. What remains unsaid will be said at another moment when it is perfect. For now, I think we're good for today. With deep bows and big love, go have a beautiful kingly day for yourselves. Chat to you soon.